This is Sung Soo, with some good news and some sombering news. For the good news, Muse on Minis continues to be incredible in their support of myself and my War Machine-related forays. They've created a discount code, MileHighMuse, which will net my listeners 10% off, which is incredible. You can find / follow them at Muse on Minis, and their websites are museonminis.com, where you can find this and all of my other podcasts, and Muse on Store, where you can find all their wonderful products. It's worth noting that this discount code works across all brands, anything from officially branded Guild Ball tokens to Infinity Objectives to the War Machine tokens we all love. The discount code MileHighMuse entered at checkout will grant you 10% off. A huge thanks to Muse for allowing me to pass this along to all of my listeners. Be sure to give them a like and a follow on social media, and consider them when looking for high-quality gaming accessories. In addition, Muse is kicking back a percentage of every purchase using this code to support me. This was certainly not expected and beyond my expectations I had when Muse reached out to me, but it got me thinking. For a statistical convergence, it's Stussy and I. For tactical tips, it's Pat, Tim, and myself. On tangential even, I've had 13 episodes with 16 different guests. So instead of keeping the money, I've decided to donate it to a charity, which will periodically rotate. For the remainder of 2018, any support funds donated from using Mile High Muse on checkout will be donated to Han Wheeler in support of his courageous battle with cancer. Han is one of our own, a wargamer, and a young man fighting for his life. His father, Josh, is host of Chain Attack, and my heart goes out to them and their family during this time. I'm all in on Team Han. Never tell me the odds. Be thankful for what you have, gamers. Remember that it's just a game. Welcome to episode 2 of Tactical Tips Mark 2. I'm Sung Soo, and I'm excited to be here. Today, we'll have a look at the High Reclaimer and Exemplar Interdiction. But before we begin, let's check in with our experts, Tim and Pat. Tim, how are you holding up?
I'm doing spectacularly, so I'm happy to be recording our second of the new Tactical Tips. It's been a real treat to be involved in the project.
Episode 1 was a lot of fun, and hopefully this one will be just as enjoyable. So Pat, how's everything going on your side of the world?
Pretty good. It's cold and grey and raining here in London, but hopefully recording this episode with you guys will make up for that.
Doesn't London have like two seasons, grey and August?
Yes, although this year August has lasted 4 months, so we're pretty happy.
So that's a good August.
Mm-hmm. August is like my least favorite month of the year, but we can talk about that later, I suppose. So let's jump right into it. For today's episode, I thought we'd take another list from the WTC, from the second place finishing team, Poland South. And I think his name is Christoph H. The list was super interesting to me based on how close it was to the Menoth CID when the WTC list lock occurred. But he's running the High Reclaimer and Exemplar in Addiction. The list was the High Reclaimer with Adjudicator, Bastion Seneschal. Those words are hard. He's running Gade. He's running Sevi Zero with Fire of Salvation on it, a Min Choir, Max Errants, Max Vengers, and a Min Skirmishers with the Chieftain and Guide. So I open it up to the experts. What is this High Reclaimer list trying to do?
So in one word, I would say attrition. This is a list that is playing a lot of models that do a lot of damage, a lot of work turn on turn. It's only playing 10 points of support models. That's a minimum choir and Sevi Zero. Everything else is in the list to dish out damage or to hold ground. And it's combining that with High Reclaimer's feat, Resurrection, which returns models to play, with Burning Ash to mitigate damage on the approach, and Hand of Fate to increase damage, plus the raw power of the Judicator, which has come out of CID looking pretty amazing.
That's putting it lightly. It's also worth noting that the Signs Importance-like effect on the Judicator's Reliquary is not the same as Hand of Fate, the upkeep spell that High Reclaimer has. This list, it's, as Pat points out, absolutely true. It's about leveraging huge amounts of damage. And I think there's basically not a module in this entire list that doesn't take Hand of Fate incredibly well. If you put Hand of Fate on Vengers, they get Hand of Fate on their impact attacks, they get Hand of Fate on their charge attacks, they do a huge amount of work, and they're oppressively powerful cav that can really take out heavies on the charge. You put Hand of Fate on your Idrian Skirmishers against their prey target, they can do huge amounts of damage, they can punch up really, really effectively, they can have really, really powerful tipping points for where defense values cease to be relevant against that kind of shooting. You put Hand of Fate on Fire of Salvation, and he trades well with nearly any heavy in the game, especially once you factor in things like the plus one to hit that everything is getting, and the plus one to damage that everyone's getting from Sevi Zero. Pat described Sevi Zero as a support solo, and I think that's really the way he's going to play most of the game. It's worth acknowledging that because he benefits from his own Eye of Menoth, he isn't actually a slouch in combat himself. He can kill a lot of things. His immolates are quite powerful. He does a reasonable amount of work when push comes to shove. The Errant plus Gade package gives you a solo that's almost immortal on a flag if need be. And the Bastion Seneschal gives you Tactician, which gives you a lot of flexibility in terms of the way that you tarpit the other pieces in the list. And the Judicator combination of Signs Importance and, Signs Importance plus Hand of Fate, the average roll on an unboosted attack is, I think, 9.2. 9.2 plus Inaccurate to take it down to Rat 1, plus Severius to take it up to Rat 2 again. It hits like an 11.2 with an unboosted Inaccurate rocket shot. So it's killing heavies pretty effectively.
Yeah, that's real scary. I'd also add that one of the cool things about this list is you mentioned modules, Tim, that can receive Hand of Fate. This list basically has four very flexible modules, right? It's got the Skirmishers, the Errants, the Vengers, and the Judicator. And all four of those have good threat ranges, can deal with a decent number of different targets, especially when combined with Hand of Fate, and can be in different places on the table, not worrying too much about things like terrain, and being able to deal with almost whatever is facing them, while also being able to combine their threat ranges to concentrate on harder or more important targets. And then you kind of have the Fire of Salvation acting as backup for that, to kind of, as a second line, to deal with anything that the infantry can't handle.
Yeah, absolutely. And you've got a Min Choir, but you only really need a couple of them. Like, you've got Min Skirmishers, who are a bit of an interesting choice. I think the best thing about the Skirmishers is really that prey damage potential they have. And while they lose a little bit of effectiveness by going down to a Min unit, I think you've got a bunch of units that can score zones really well here. You could dedicate the Idrian Skirmishers to a flank without feeling like you're giving up 20 points to score a zone. You can dedicate the Errants to a flank without feeling like you're giving up 20 points to score a zone. Both of those are making concessions to have those units be like the budget version of themselves. The Errants not having the UA, the Idrian Skirmishers missing or bodies, to deliver, I think, ultimately more firepower to the list.
Yeah, and I think the one thing you're really getting as well is you're then getting access to the solos, right? You're scrimping on the units so that you can pay points for the Seneschal and for Gade. The Seneschal obviously adds great support to the list, but without those two solos, you don't really have anything that can reliably stand on flags unless you're willing to risk Severius.
Which you're not.
Yeah, exactly. So it's kind of a necessary concession. Because this list has good threat, Pathfinder, decent speed, it wants to be able to play a good scenario game, so you need some solos that can do that. And as a result, you just can't have everything you want.
Yeah, I think it's a super, super cool list. And it's evidence of the flexibility available to Menoth that we hadn't seen quite as much of. It felt like when people were playing Creator's Might and Faithful Masses before this most recent CID, that it was pretty easy to predict what you were going to see when you were playing into Menoth. And this is one example of a really interesting list out of the WTC. But I think the kind of High Reclaimer with Judicator plus minus a bunch of other pieces, we're seeing more variety there, and I'm not seeing a lot of obviously poor choices at this stage. Certainly not in this list.
Yeah, so in episode one, obviously, everyone remembers, we reviewed Kruger 2, and the consensus there was he could kind of play the game a bunch of different directions. Is High Reclaimer shoehorned, so to speak, into just playing attrition, Tim?
More than Kruger, certainly. I think when we talk about Kruger as being an incredibly flexible list that could do kind of any dimension of play, and he had sort of this strategy if your opponent was participatory, and a different one if your opponent just wasn't. I think High Reclaimer is expecting to kill your pieces. He's setting up every single turn to retain scenario relevancy, potentially to engage in some piece trading, but then to leverage his really strong threat ranges, his really powerful attrition, and his damage and accuracy multiplication, which he brings both of in the form of Hand of Fate, to create some situations where he's going to win the late game. If you imagine High Reclaimer as a chess player, I think he's trying to set up advantageous positioning to engineer good trades and to, you know, take rooks for knights.
Yeah, I definitely agree. One thing I just wanted to clarify in case any listeners get the wrong end of the stick from what you said. One of the things you said there is High Reclaimer has really good threat ranges, and actually he doesn't, right? But what this list has done is they've deliberately taken models in Menoth that all have really good threat. Right, so
sure.
You're taking fast troops with ranged attacks, you're taking a colossal with very long range guns, and you're taking Cav to mitigate one of his few weaknesses. And I think one of High Reclaimer's biggest strengths is he adds a lot of resilience to models that already have quite a lot of different defensive abilities between Choir and the various different defensive tech pieces on the Errants and the Idrians. That already can be difficult for some lists to deal with, but once you add Burning Ash and Resurrection on top, you have to fight through so many models over the course of the game. It really makes the attrition play shine.
Yeah, and I guess one of the like threat range pieces that I think people might, at this stage of learning, be forgetting about is that Severius has a Road to War. So like Fire of Salvation looks like a Menoth heavy that's only speed 5 and is only going to be involved in the late game. But you can get a 3-inch move out of them. And if you do, and like you can trigger that really easily with the number of guns that are available to you. If you can trigger that 3-inch move out of him, like he can end up sort of rocketing up the table.
Okay, great. So does this list's MO change dramatically depending on the scenario it's playing? Or is it always going to be playing that attrition for advantageous board scenario?
I think this might be a weird list on Mirage. I think this is a great list on the pit too. I think in standoff and recon, it can kind of choose a spot to bunker well, occupy that place on the table with its really resilient pieces, and take some of its higher speed pieces like Cav and play the other flank. In spots where you only really need to contest relevantly one scenario element and then swing forward on the other side, I think this list is really, really powerful and it's going to do a lot of work. I think one of the things that a list with a ton of really powerful threat ranges and a lot of damage and a lot of access to damage wants to do is it wants to say, okay, if you're going to play back really conservatively, I'm going to score all the points. And as Pat already said, the presence of these solos is obviously a big part of that. In Spread the Net, I think you have to score your own flag. And I think you have to be able to pretend that you're going to score your opponent's flag too if they don't remain relevant on it. In Mirage, I think you have to at least try to offer the opportunity to score 2 out of 3 flags. Mm-hmm. If you're not trying to score 2 out of 3 flags, then I think your opponent's going to play back a little bit more than you want. And with that being such a live scenario, if you didn't have those solos available to just go up and be relevant in those spots, I think you'd have a harder time. Having said that, I think I don't think its style of play changes dramatically, but I think if it had made fewer concessions toward those most live of scenarios, it would be looking at playing the game quite differently in a few of those parts of the packet.
Yeah, I think it's certainly not a dedicated scenario list, right? It's not designed to win on scenario, but it's got all the pieces where it can play a strong game. And I wouldn't be surprised if it wins on scenario through a result of getting ahead on attrition, and in particular, collapsing a flank, right? And being able to consistently score points every turn. While the opponent falls further and further behind. One of the things that I think is a little bit problematic about the list for scenario is just the fact that it has that Judicator, right? And the Judicator does so much damage that you want to be optimizing its activations to deal damage while also staying safe from melee retaliation where it doesn't have that much defense. You know, it's the one mod on your list that can be seen through Burning Ash. Choir don't do much to help you being charged. So it wants to be able to position where it can deal a ton of damage and be safe. And having that large battle group model in that position can be a bit of a liability on scenario and can stop you making those optimal scenario plays you might be able to do in some other lists.
Those are great pieces of advice and definitely something to keep in mind. So he's not super scenario dependent. For any new Menoth player, what are some tips we have for piloting this list? How high is the skill floor needed to really start getting value out of this Judicator?
So I think the base level for this list is pretty low. I think it can be a hard list to play, and I think it's reasonably skill intensive. I mean, every list in War Machine at the top levels is pretty tough to play and play well. But I think this list is quite forgiving because the models are very flexible, have decent resiliency, and High Reclaimer helps that. So it's a list where if you have some models in the wrong places or you make some bad moves, you aren't necessarily scuppering your game plan. The exception to that, as I mentioned just now, is the Judicator. And you definitely cannot afford to lose the Judicator prematurely. You want to be leveraging its incredible damage output every turn of the game until you've won. And as long as you're playing with that in mind at the start, I think how you use the infantry models is less important. And if you're focusing on the Judicator, that would be where I would want to start learning this list.
Yeah, I think that's the right assessment of things. I was gonna disagree with Pat if he said the skill floor was particularly high for this list, but we're on the same page. I'm not saying Menoth is autopilot or anything like that, but I think more than almost any other faction in the game, and I've said this before, I think Menoth rewards good fundamentals and good positioning play, and I don't think there's anything special about playing Menoth beyond playing good War Machine. I think if you're an existing player who knows how to play good War Machine, you should find Menoth delightful and rewarding. You should see early success with the faction based on core fundamentals of the game. If you're a player who's successful with other factions, who goes to Menoth and who struggles with it, it could be that your fundamentals are bad. And I don't mean like to say anything disrespectful, but a lot of players kind of crutch on the identity of their faction. They play really, really well using the kind of trajectories available to them in a specific faction. A specific kind of tool set that leverages a particular kind of assassination or a particular kind of line of play. And I think Menoth says, like, trade positively, bring good damage multiplication, be able to take a hit, position for the 2 to 3 to 4 turns from now, play a longer game and be willing to endure understanding a longer game and do all of those things while managing your order of activations well and playing the game efficiently. I think this list is going to do all of those things. And it's a little bit like saying, what's the skill floor for War Machine? Well, it's there. It's not absent. Don't get me wrong. And then in turn, what's the skill ceiling for War Machine? Well, you know, look outside on a clear day and you'll find it. This list is simple enough to pick up if you've got the general sense of how War Machine works. And it's as high as you're willing to take it.
So, Tim, kind of building on that, this sounds like it would be a good list for a beginning War Machine player to try to break into the tournament scene with. Is that correct?
Yeah, I think so. I mean, I think Menoth's a good faction for a player trying to break into the tournament scene. But I think this plays to their strengths really well. High Reclaimer is a good caster for an introductory caster because he's a little bit forgiving. Because in a matchup where you're not requiring it to stay in the game, his feat can apologize for mistakes and can fix problems that you make. He has that potential to just sort of suddenly lose a lot of attrition in a situation where you didn't realize you were in a bad spot, but collect a whole bunch of souls and find a kind of rubber banding type of assassination. And that can really teach people that War Machine is this kind of yo-yo experience. He's playing the Judicator, who is great. He has an enormous number of personal Warjack points, which means he plays with more models in his list than other people usually get to. And that means that his line of play is a little bit more forgiving. This list is well-tuned for the current Steamroller packet, and it is designed to leverage the pieces in the Menoth faction that shore up the weaknesses in High Reclaimer's kit, as Pat mentioned already about threat ranges. You know, that's what he's brought here. Those are the tools that have been brought to bear. And I don't think there's any inefficiency in this list. And one of the things newer players are sometimes looking for is a solution to the kind of plaguing doubt that I've built a list and I think it's good, but maybe it has a bunch of inefficiencies. And maybe like that's why people kind of gravitate a little bit toward net listing to avoid making mistakes in list building that punish them more in the game. There's nothing about this list that's going to do anything but require you to play the list well.
Yeah, definitely. Even to the extent where some of the modules are even the simpler versions of themselves, right? Once you figure out how they work, I think the journey of learning this list is... it's a fair to say. I think you're right, Tim. I think this is a fairly simple list to learn and play, given that when we say fairly simple, we still mean enormously complex.
Yeah, all you need to know is every fundamental element of positioning in this game, and you should be fine.
Yeah.
Great. So for those people facing the fire of Adjudicator with all those dice, what are the key points any faction needs to have in mind when playing into this list?
Oh my gosh, it does so much damage. Are you aware how much damage that Adjudicator does? It's ridiculous. It's utterly ridiculous. I just wanted to stress that because you might, if you've not played against it, you might fall into the trap of thinking, well, I've played against Colossals before. I know they do a lot of damage at range. You know, they can boost a ton of shots and, you know, maybe they'll do some good damage to my heavy. And over a couple of turns, maybe that heavy will be in big trouble. This is not the case with the Adjudicator. The Adjudicator will destroy that heavy. Absolutely destroy it. You should be
the heavy that you're describing. The one that's mostly dead after two rounds of shooting, that one just took the blast damage. Like,
yeah.
It was the secondary target of the Adjudicator.
Exactly. Yeah. So, I just wanted to emphasize how much damage the Adjudicator does. It is a lot, and you need to keep that in mind. You have to, I think when you're playing against it, you have to work under the assumption whatever is in threat range of the Adjudicator is very likely to die. Even if I think it's pretty tough, even if I've got a pretty high armor heavy and I've got some shield guards, maybe that will be enough. Well, remember the rest of the list also has access to Hand of Fate and has good threat ranges. And even if the Adjudicator rolls a bit poorly, maybe misses a rocket shot and that swings it, this list has plenty of ways to mop up extra damage and ensure that the key targets it needs to kill die. And so you need to be playing with that in mind, and you need to have enough redundancy when facing down Adjudicator that you can threaten it while also losing pieces.
I think we talked a little bit in the Kruger episode about how one of the ways to play into him is just kind of oversaturating him with meat and just like giving him so many targets he can't play the game he wants to play. That is absolutely not a valid strategy against this list.
No.
If you give him your entire army, he will kill all of it.
Yeah, it's just too much damage. So I think one of the things about this list is how you play against the Adjudicator and how you play against everything else are quite different. And this is kind of a list of two parts, right? Where the things that are strong against the Adjudicator are not necessarily strong against the infantry and vice versa. And a lot of the skill of the matchup between you and your opponent will be trying to engineer those rock, paper, scissors scenarios where... as the opponent, you can take apart the pieces of High Reclaimer's army that are presented to you while not having to walk into the teeth of the other models that you can't deal with.
If you're going second against this list, pay very, very close attention to deployment strategy. I would expect Adjudicator to be deployed centrally, possibly with deference to terrain and scenario elements to kind of find a place it's going to go. I think you have to very obviously telegraph where the Adjudicator is going to end up in a lot of matchups. And I think if you know exactly what in your list is good against the Adjudicator, deploying reactively and really responding, even if it kind of makes your blob that you normally put down on the table look a little bit weird, I think that behavior is going to give you a lot of success in a matchup. Because as Pat points out about that notion of rock, paper, scissors, you want to create small engagements, screened and protected by terrain as much as possible, where you're fighting the right things with the right things.
Yeah, that makes sense. And one thing I think is worth pointing out in case anyone isn't aware is this theme provides the Adjudicator with Blessed. some of the traditional ways people would go about tanking the Judicator's hideous damage output are mitigated by that.
When preparing to plan to this list at the WTC, which didn't actually end up occurring for me, so that was fortunate, I talked a little bit about playing my Forka 2 list into it, which is access to Earthborns who get their armor bonus from terrain and the stone, neither of which are magical. They are actually pretty survivable against the Judicator. I think it takes it 2 turns of shooting to kill them, which is normal for a Colossal and really quite good for a Judicator. But it's still a very challenging matchup that requires like layered positioning and elements of well-played piece trading. And into a double Judicator High Reclaimer variant, I played the matchup out, practiced it, and developed a kind of a strategy for layering my piece trading to play against those pieces. This list is harder to play into because it's much less predictable in the way that it moves as compared to the double Judicator version. You can't, like, you can know, generally speaking, where the Judicator probably will be off deployment and side choice. You don't know any of that information about any of the other pieces in the list because they're all quite flexible and quite modular. Like, they can be whatever they need to be in the right circumstance through the right stacking of buffs.
So quickly then, Pat, is there anything that this High Reclaimer list really doesn't want to play into? Can you think of one or two meta list examples that this list would rather not see across the table?
So it's a little bit of a tricky question to answer just because this list is quite new and it's only really surged in popularity since the Judicator came out of CID. So I haven't had a chance to see every possible matchup and know how it works. But in general, things that it doesn't want to see. It doesn't like... High Reclaimer is playing with Clouds and he's playing with Recursion, which are two things that are commonly answered in lists. So if you have good ways to mitigate that, then you're a long way towards dealing with the infantry portion of his list. Okay, if he can't resurrect those models or protect them with Clouds, they're a lot more vulnerable. And although they do have their own defensive abilities, if you have dedicated anti-infantry power that can deal with them, then they'll crumble pretty quickly. And the Judicator alone can't be everywhere at once and can't deal with threats from a lot of different directions all at the same time. So I think the infantry are more of the weak point of the list. Especially because they are protecting the Judicator. So I think you need to be able to dismantle the infantry and have a plan to dismantle the infantry and then deal with the Judicator after the fact, because you can't expect to be gunning for the Judicator without dealing with them first.
On my team at the WTC, we were pretty sure this list would struggle a little bit with certain Crix builds. I think there's Scar lists that play 2 Wraith engines that can be a bit of a problem for lists that don't have default access to magic weapons. That's mitigated a bit by scenarios that have an objective. I also don't know if this beats Lich 3 with Slayers. It's obviously got several tools that are strong in that matchup, but a lot of lists that we tested into that had several tools but weren't kind of a tooled answer themselves had problems closing out the late game. I have no doubt that a unit of Avengers can kill a Slayer or two. I have no doubt the same of Fire of Salvation. Judicator is certainly no slouch in melee at all, and even its guns are going to punch through some points of damage. The question becomes, is it enough? And the answer is maybe.
Yeah, that's a great example of a matchup I'd love to know more about, but I just haven't really seen to be able to answer.
Yeah.
Awesome. No, thank you very much. And one thing you guys did hit on was, obviously you both are experienced WTC players. Do you think the CID process in general will change the way that some teams approach list locking? I know some countries previously locked lists very early in the year, and the goal was for players to grind as many games as possible. As you guys both pointed out, this model, a lot of the things in this list came out very close to the WTC list locking process. How do you foresee that process changing in the future?
That's a really good question. It's tough to answer. I think so. Okay, here's some things that I believe to be true. One, every time we've had CID, the models in CID have come out being very, very competitive and have almost straight away had an impact in the tournament scene. So I do think that when preparing for WTC, you have to have CID in mind and you have to have a plan for using CID models. However, the challenge is with the timelines involved, you're probably selecting your team and your players before you know exactly how CID is going to shape up. And you won't necessarily know which release cycles are going to come out in time. A good example from this year is Retribution, which was deliberately postponed so that it wouldn't interfere with WTC. So I think if you're allowing that consideration of the power of CID to heavily impact your selection, then you're gambling. And you won't be sure exactly which factions will have updates or even exactly what in that faction will be powerful. So I think it's a good thing to keep in mind, but I don't think it can weigh too heavily on your decision-making.
I think, as always, you should select the team of the five best players available to you. And you should work hard to be flexible and to be adaptable to changing meta conditions. My team didn't have a Menoth player, and I didn't ask anyone to switch to Menoth based on the objective power level of the CID. I think it was really strong, but I think we picked the best lists we could. Player knowledge and player skill are always going to trump kind of power level of a specific list in almost all circumstances. This year I got to be a captain, and as a captain we made one faction swap kind of at the 11th hour, but it was to a faction that the player was already quite familiar with. I think WTC players are often multi-faction players who've got flexibility and familiarity there, and you know, awareness of the CID, attentiveness to the CID, testing for the CID, and then switching to a faction if it is both already in your wheelhouse, already comfortable, and something that you feel like you can do in that window of time. As Pat points out, it's a gamble, but it's one that might.
Yeah, one thing I'd add is I think the more important thing to do when considering CID, and this applies to WTC, but it also applies to everybody playing in a competitive event, is it's really important to know what all the new stuff does and to try and get a few games against it. And that would be the thing I'd be emphasizing to my team above maybe an 11th hour faction swap, is in the run up to the event, making sure that everyone is experienced against that new hotness, whatever it is, because it's bound to be powerful and it will take you off guard if you're not aware of it.
Yeah.
No, thank you very much. I appreciate the WTC insight there. So we've talked a lot about the High Reclaimer Judicator list we've seen so far. Are there any other variations we could expect to see? Are there pieces you think are missing from the High Reclaimer Judicator list in particular, Tim?
I mean, kind of one honorable mention note. This list doesn't have it, but I've seen lists that run like either Min Errants or play around with the points in an effort to get the Errant Unit Attachment in. A cool change that came out of CID is the Errant Unit Attachment got marked target. And High Reclaimer can do cute things like, you know, put that piece somewhere absolutely key to get yet another accuracy multiplier on that adjudicator. Helps the rockets hit more accurately. And if you can line up a spot where he's sort of tangent to a spray you want to lay down, you can get marked target on like the entire 10-inch spray if you're shooting something goofy like Madrex, Fenblades or something.
Yeah, it was really strange that that thing got marked target, right? It was somewhat unexpected because I don't think it was really tested in CID and it came out of the blue. So I think a lot of players missed it.
Yeah, it's a fluff nod, right? Because Errants are the ranger class of the Knights exemplar. So it's kind of like a nod to Signarian Rangers. Like it's got kind of a cute include there. It doesn't completely transform their role, but it does sort of remind you in the fluff that they're supposed to be the sort of scout force.
Yeah, that's cool. It's also really, really good, right? For all the reasons you said, but I think it's worth mentioning. With High Reclaimer, you have that additional synergy of being able to keep that single model, because it is just the single model that has marked target, right?
Yeah, it's the officer model.
Yeah,
officer?
So you can better protect it with clouds. And am I right in thinking you can bring it back with your feet?
Does feet bring back? See, that's the thing I should probably know offhand, but I feel like the feet bring back trooper models, but maybe I'm wrong.
Faction troopers. So if it's the officer, you can't bring it back.
Yeah. So that's okay.
Wah, wah. Yeah.
Even a main unit, you can keep them in the game for a lot longer than they have any business being. And that officer can call to sacrifice a whole bunch of models, so you certainly can bring back. So he's sticky, I think it's sufficient to say.
Yeah, definitely. And I think it's especially interesting because right now in the meta, there's an increasingly large number of lists, I think, that have very high defense. And although the Judicator, with its ability to double up on extra dice, drop the lowest, is very accurate, when you're dealing with infantry in the defense 15 plus range, it's really, really nice to get that plus two and start to be able to hit them even without boosts and to consistently hit when boosting.
It's a resource allocation issue too. Like if you really want your AoE gun to accurately hit, say, like, you know, Madrak champions, if they're being given the concealment bonus or something like that, you want the multiplier available so that you can boost damage, because you can only give the Judicator 3 focus, and those focus ideally should be put into damage boosts on models that are simultaneously high defense and high armor or have a lot of boxes.
Yeah, for sure. It's or also worth
assassination too, right?
Same thing. Yes, great for assassination. Makes those rockets really much more reliable at hitting casters. And it's really nice on the Idrians and the Errants themselves, right? For more consistently dealing with opposing infantry.
Yeah, it's a little bit like the shooting gallery rule in a cute kind of way, because that's the same thing. It's like within 5 inches, they get plus two to hit. The Errants kind of have their own, air quotes, shooting gallery that makes them a better a kind of mid-range skirmishy unit. Synergizes well with things like quick work.
Yeah, and I can see the appeal of a min unit with that officer, because like you said, you can expend the rest of the unit on keeping him alive, and it's a lower cost if you need to run that model to get the plus two hit where you really need it. You're giving up fewer model activations overall.
So real quickly, guys, I believe you actually misspoke on the High Reclaimer's feat. The High Reclaimer's feat allows you to bring back trooper models, which should allow you to bring back the Exemplar CA, and it should allow you to bring back the named shield guards that Rovan brings. Does that sound correct?
It brings back the named shield guards, but I don't think it brings back an officer.
So what is a trooper? A trooper is any member of a unit, but is there more to it than that?
I thought a trooper is just any member to a unit.
Well, I don't know. Maybe it does. Let's find out.
So you've got warriors, you've got leaders, you've got grunts, you've got troopers, right?
I'm just going to look up the anatomy of the unit section of the...
Yeah, I'm looking at the same. All models in a unit are troopers.
Sick. All right.
You definitely can bring it back, and that's amazing.
Yeah. Okay. Synergy. Cool. Yeah, I think it's super dope.
So what you guys are telling me is the High Reclaimer Judicator list we just went over could actually get better with the inclusion of a unit attachment for 4 points. That's great to hear.
Better's a bit subjective. It's more accurate for sure. Like that, we talked like 11.2 is the average roll, and like how crazy it is boosting and how accurate it is with its rat, even though it has the literal rule inaccurate. But like it can get even more accurate. I think the choice here is just play more beef, and both have merit.
Mm-hmm. Fair enough. So we've talked a lot about High Reclaimer Judicator. We've kind of talked about how the Judicator is the star of the list. So who else can run the Judicator to this level? Where else can we expect to see this monster? Any thoughts, Pat?
So I think the High Reclaimer is not doing an awful lot for Judicator, right? He's helping keep the screening infantry alive, and he's adding a decent buff. But that's really all he's doing. And I think you'll find that if you go down the list of Menoth casters, there's a compelling case for any of them to be running a Judicator. because the Judicator is amazing, and they all have some level of support for it. The ones that I think really stand out, there's two in my mind. The first is High Exemplar Krios. So Krios 1. I mean, a couple of reasons. First up, he's got Defender's Ward. And when you're running a Colossal, anything to help it stay alive is really, really great. Secondly, he's running Purification. You don't need this if you're in the Knights Exemplar Theme Force because you have Blessed, but it's nice to have the option to have Purification with your guns to deal with some defensive tech if you're not in that Theme Force. And then last and most important, obviously, is his feet. The classic Krios pop and drop, where he knocks down everything in his control, really ensures an assassination or killing key pieces with the rockets from the Judicator.
I think on the Krios list, honorable mention for Lamentation, which just takes over a whole bunch of games. There's Rask lists and Haley 3 lists that just want no part of that action.
Yeah, one of the things about Lamentation is it's at its best if you're able to put your caster quite far forward, and having the extreme threat of the Judicator kind of helps because it keeps other things at bay and lets Krios advance behind it.
Yeah, the combination of like a building plus a Judicator predicting Krios together, like that's usually a pretty far forward place for him to kind of sit protected by those two pieces and block line of sight from almost everything from two pieces that can't just be knocked down.
Yep. It's also a little bit more marginal, but it's because he's got Purification, but it's worth mentioning that Krios has Dispel on his melee, which is always nice when you're protecting a single high-value model, because you don't have to worry about expending resources to get rid of debuffs that might go on that Colossal. Now, this is especially marginal in Menoth, but it gives you options.
It sure does. Well, and like if they, you know, do something goofy like Crippling Grasp your Colossal, or you know, put something especially nasty on it, but you still want to be personally putting the Lamentation up the board, like you really don't want to cast Purification in that circumstance. So
yeah,
Dispel is a good rule.
For sure. And it gives you some options where you might be able to get away with battle as your Prayer from the Crier, because you know you can dispel any upkeeps that go up during that turn.
You said you had two casters, Pat?
Yeah, the other one that I think is really, really strong is the new caster, just out of CRD, High Exemplar Cyrenia. So she's a really interesting caster because she's kind of got a whole bunch of support abilities, and she supports infantry as well as warjacks. I could see her in a similar list to this High Reclaimer list because of that. And with her battle plan, she can do a lot of interesting things for errants, and as well as with Dash. But the reason why she's really good with the Judicator is three spells on her spell list. So she's got Enviable Resolve, which is an armor buff, much like P. Krios, plus two armor. But then she's got Positive Charge, a spell that is not very frequently seen, but is incredibly strong, right? Its target-friendly warjack gets +2 to melee attack and damage rolls, and friendly faction models within 3 inches of the jack get the same benefit. This is an absurdly powerful melee buff. I think the only potential downside of it in the list of the Judicator is it might just be an unnecessary buff where you're hitting so hard and so accurate that there's just no point casting it. But the way War Machine works, it's always nice to be sure, right?
Yeah, and we talked before about like shoring up assassinations. Like, obviously, that's a good tool if you want to go into melee and kill someone with the Judicator. Also, just if you need to kill, say, like, 5 jacks, and you only have 3 focus. I mean, there you go. Opportunities.
Yeah, for sure. I mean, it's worth that's worth consideration, right? Because one of the more reliable ways to deal with a Colossal is to send multiple heavies towards it, knowing that it's probably going to kill one and then die to retaliation. And if you can realistically threaten to kill every heavy in threat range, then that makes positioning for them much more difficult on the approach. The third ability, speaking of difficult to approach, is Rockwall. Which is a very powerful defensive ability whenever you want to screen a model from charges. So obviously Rockwall places a wall template, that's nice for cover, but it's really great for just blocking landing spots that would get to melee the Judicator. And it's especially good for blocking opposing huge bases, which I really like because the Judicator can pretty much reliably kill most things that are smaller than a huge base in a single round of shooting. So being able to ensure that any huge bases can't retaliate in melee gives you more time to shoot them down.
Yeah, people think Rockwall is a cover piece to protect your heavies, but it's actually not cover at all and to protect Colossals. I played a lot of it in Baldur 2, and just Rockwall plus a Woldrath is very difficult to approach. You can, if you've got any terrain on the board at all, you can use a combination of a terrain piece plus a Rockwall to sometimes just completely cordon off the approach for certainly huge bases and sometimes even large bases. Double positive mention for if your opponent's heavies that are approaching your Judicator don't have Pathfinder, and then you can engineer spots where you're like, well, you can charge to here, So I'm just going to put this a little bit behind your landing spot so it's impossible for you to get there. And really, really create horrible choices and really big problems for people. Sometimes you stick the rock wall just like right in front of the adjudicator, just like sticking out. And there's just nowhere they can land because of the vector you place it on. That they want to be in a whole bunch of different spots, and even reach heavies can't approach it. If you just sort of sit down with a colossal base and a rock wall template and start like putting it in spots and then using another proxy base to sort of see where heavies can land, you'll see what we're talking about. It's fantastically cancerous how difficult it is to put a model next to that huge base with a rock wall there.
Yeah, it's really nuts. And once you consider the stacking defensive buffs you then have, right, where you've got Rockwall to stop melee, you've got a +2 armor buff, and you've got the Cryo benefits that can mitigate shooting or spells, all on a Colossal with a lot of hit points, it's such a difficult piece to remove. It's very, very hard to deal with indeed.
Yeah, you mentioned other casters you could see. One of the ones that I've seen bandied about quite a bit is switching the list out of Exemplar Interdiction into Creator's Might and playing something like Resnik 2, who has Spell Piercer. You're in a position now where you're running two, maybe three huge bases, but you don't have to be an Exemplar Interdiction to get the Blessed theme benefit. You've got access to that on your own. You can have magical guns for the mirror or other places where it becomes really relevant to do it, and you end up getting more free solos for the Jack allocation you take. And then we've talked already about how powerful the damage is on that Colossal. You've got situations where if they sort of try to jam you with high defense pieces, he has a battle group based curse, so he can really help it unstick itself if you're in a situation where it needs to do some melee punching.
Yeah, he also increases its threat range, right, with Boundless Charge, which is not especially common in Menoth.
Mm-hmm. It's a good spell. M. Durst, I think that might be it. It's certainly not a faction signature spell.
Yeah. Speaking of Durst, he's probably a good shout with this model as well, right? It plays into his game plan of having high armor and being pretty much unkillable on the feet, while also letting him, like we said, threaten with Boundless Charge. It's got deceleration for extra armor against shooting. Seems solid.
He can also use it to protect a bunch of high-value solos on the approach, which is kind of a cute element of his feat that a lot of people miss out on. Makes it an interesting choice to put it in things like Faithful Masses, which is a theme he plays nicely in.
Yeah, I mean, just the fact that the base is larger gives you more options there, right? As well as the feat kind of performing double duty, where it protects the infantry, who in turn block landing zones to stop heavier targets actually reaching the adjudicator if they are optimistic enough to try and take it on under the feet.
I mean, sometimes you have to. The way that you can play this piece, you can go really, really far forward early, put a huge amount of pressure on them, and if they opt not to come in, you know, sometimes that puts them in a very precarious position scenario-wise.
Yeah, I mean, and that's basically Durst's whole game plan, right? Advance forward, throw up my feet, threaten a long charge range, and put you between a rock and a hard place.
Ho, little bastion of the faith guy there. Rock of the faith? I think he's a rock of the faith. You're literally between a rock and a hard place. Mm-hmm. That's good. That's a little pen off fluff witticism, right? That's what you come to tactical tips for.
No, it's great to hear the adjudicator being taken in themes out of Exemplar Interdiction. That was a great shout there, Tim, and definitely be aware, and I'll be on the lookout for those things. So, Tim, you kind of alluded to it, but a lot of people are running double adjudicator. Can we talk over the pros and cons of doing that?
I think what it comes down to with double adjudicator is the same for most double colossal lists, which is you're spending a huge number of points on two models. And once you start spending that percentage of your army, they start to have to, their options become more limited because they have to start worrying more about scenario. Or sorry, I should say you as the player with the double adjudicators has to think about scenario more. And those two models, being a higher portion of your list, need to be in relevant scenario positions. They need to be scoring or blocking scoring, which means they can't necessarily be in optimal places for their damage output. So if you compare this to High Reclaimer with lots of very mobile infantry with high speed values, advanced deployment, Pathfinder, those infantry are going to be all over the board. And they're going to naturally be contesting and scoring anything that your opponent is letting them. And the adjudicator can do almost whatever it wants in that list while being protected by the infantry, who are simultaneously keeping up with the pressure and scenario. As soon as those infantry disappear, disappear and replaced by another Judicator, both those Judicators have to be very careful about their positioning and make sure that they're keeping all of the scenarios live and protected. And that means they have to maybe be pulled apart from each other. They can't be close enough to each other necessarily to support well.
When we talk a little bit about answers to things, I think the Judicator is a piece that maybe has some answers that are available, certainly in some factions or in certain lists that are kind of teched in a specific direction. But let's imagine you're playing a bit of a balanced list. So a list that's got some good infantry clearing, it's got some good heavy hitting targets, it's got some durable things that can come in on the approach. If you're playing a double Judicator build and those Judicators are in a position table-wise or terrain-wise, and if you're an exemplar introduction, you've got +2 inches of deployment, so you get a bit of extra flexibility there. If you're in a position where you can be relevant on the table early enough, sometimes you can say, here are my 2 Judicators. A whole swath of your army does literally nothing to these pieces. They just simply do not have the tools to engage with them in a meaningful way. And as a result, I've turned off a whole bunch of your list before you've even started playing the game. And I can focus my target priority on the pieces capable of killing Judicators and then simply rule the late game because you've lost everything that can interact meaningfully with these models.
Yeah, I think that's definitely possible. Certainly, double Judicator is a difficult skew to deal with. Between the defensive abilities of the Crier and the massive damage output on those 2 models, it's a lot of armies are going to struggle to deal with 2, for sure. On the other hand, although you do have to kind of just handle the damage output, one thing that you don't necessarily have to do is you don't have to beat both of them. When you're running double Colossal, my experience is often if one Colossal falls, then your list starts to be in big trouble because you don't have enough pieces to stay relevant on scenario.
Right. And of course, Pat's right to point out that it's a skew because the counterpoint to my notion that like the tools you have in your list might not be relevant against the Judicators, so that turns them off effectively. If you have a list that has a lot of good tools for Judicators, there's nothing in your list that can play without punishment. In a list that only has 1 Judicator, there's a whole bunch of tools that can jam guns that can do reasonable work to them. They can kind of screen for heavies like we've talked about in a couple of different ways that are, you know, engineering to kill the Judicator. Like, you've got a lot of pieces that can protect those things by just, you know, putting stuff against things are ill-suited to handle them. The Judicator is a remarkably flexible piece. So from its sort of gun platform location in the, you know, center midpoint of the board, it can kill what it needs to kill, especially if it can do so while moving up without fearing reprisal.
No, Tim, I think those are fantastic points. And I think whether you did it intentionally or not, that's a brilliant segue. But a lot of people out there who aren't playing Menoth are kind of scrambling for answers against the High Reclaimer Judicator or just the Judicator in general. Tim, do you have any specific lists or specific tech that people could use to try to find a foothold against these things? What are some of the things you've been dojoing to play into this matchup?
So I've mentioned a couple times that I'm flopping between Circle and Rat right now for my convention season next year. Assyria in Shadows is actually a fantastic answer to High Reclaimer Judicator. I sort of did a from the ground up, let's build a list that has a good answer to this list. Obviously, you need magical guns. Strike Force just got magical guns as a granted ability on their officers. You need stuff that can do real work against Jax. They have weapon master attacks. You need to be able to overcome some of the armor buffs that we've already talked about, Defender's Ward and Viable Resolve, those sort of pieces. Their weapons are blessed. And ideally, you need to be able to do so with incredible damage potential from reasonable distance, and Assyria's feat just amps them up to 11. So that's a list that plays 2 units of Strike Force, which are like already a pretty good answer to it. Assyria is just a multiplier. They've got a mini feat so that they can threaten pieces that have line of sight blocked to them, which is useful. They can shoot the Judicators from all kinds of places on the board where they can use terrain to help themselves beneficially. And then my list anchors with its own Inviable Resolved Colossal, a Hyperion, who also has a magical gun at POW 18. Not blessed, but it can still do some work. And hopefully what happens is the Strike Force collectively kill a Judicator on the feat turn, and then on the second turn they soften up a second Judicator or deal with screening infantry models with the remaining pieces that are in the list. It's a good list. I like it a lot. It's definitely teched in a very specific direction, askew to address those things. The thing is, when you try to beat a list, you also have to beat anything that it's paired with. So I think Hyperion was a really important piece in the list because I wanted to also play into, say, like a Harbinger Faithful Masses list that plays a lot of fairly high-value solos. So access to the crit consume gun is really important because you can remove things like Vilmun and Monks and all those other pieces. It can run one of its own members of a strike force to center a 5-inch AoE and clip multiple solos to pull them off the board. It's a matchup that I like. Blinding Light's also a pretty good spell. Usually what that means is the Menoth player is in a position where they'll do shielding on their Colossals to prevent you from Blinding Lighting Adjudicator, which puts it in a very awkward situation. But assuming that they're doing so, they're not doing battle, so it's difficult for them to put adequate damage into the Hyperion from ranged without it being healed up by an Arcanist and repairing its own shield. So that's a matchup I really like. I think that's a very challenging one for Menoth, and I think they're probably going to bring something specific that addresses that kind of hyper-accurate, hyper-damaging shooting that can deal with the range of what they're presenting right now. Having said that, outside of that, which I've actively tested, I don't have a lot of things that love this list.
Yeah, me neither. I think it's easier almost to tech for double Judicator than it is for single. Because with single, you've got the wild card of what else is in the list and how does it deal with my plans to fight the Judicator. I think generally speaking, the way that I would approach, less specifically than Tim's list, I think your example, Tim, is amazing. I also, by the way, I think you probably have a lot of variations you could do of those lists that would still be pretty handy. For example, you mentioned the need for magic weapons, but I think if you've got Assyria, you almost don't need magic weapons because of Blinding Light and the fact that they're damned if you do, damned if you don't. So if you wanted, you could probably play her with different shooter units to achieve a similar result.
Yeah, at that point, you could play her in something like Defenders. Even Legions is a good theme for her. Her infiltrators do a lot of work, and Desters are relevant guns against the Judicator.
Yeah.
I just like the fact that they also had Blast.
Yeah, it's pretty great. It's also worth mentioning that you could probably play other casters that would support the plan in different ways, but would still work out pretty well. The one that springs to mind, obviously, is Ossian, with his feat being even more damage into Colossals than Assyria's.
I don't want to suggest that Retribution is the natural answer to Menoth or anything like that, but I also tested a little bit with a Virus 2 Forges list. In that list, Discordia is a really key include. She gives immunity to Blast, and your support units, who are Shell Arcanists, they're natively immune to Blast. So basically that entire list can be an immune to the Blast list on the approach. And if they're not playing Resnik 2, like say they're playing Serenia and Creator's Might, or they're playing outside of the Exemplar Interdiction with a caster who doesn't have access to Blast, you're a D-cell caster. So you can present really, really high armor pieces that aren't as vulnerable to the non-spray attacks, which buys you a lot of space when you're coming in. And then Synergy plus medianly hard-hitting pieces like Imperatus and even the Griffins will do real work to that list. I don't think it's as dedicated an answer as the Assyria one is, but I think it's in a pretty good spot. The other place that I think is kind of cool, and this is still talking about a Shadows list, the big thing about Shadows, of course, is that those Strike Force members are all Weapon Masters against the Judicators. So, you know, they could CRA to POW 12s, be diced down 7 and do some real work. They can also do single shots and still put chip damage in on each of those attacks, including someone like Ron, not so much just because Ron's a good caster, but because you get access to Discordia. And with the new bond, he also gets kinetic field. So you can have two fairly wide 3-inch bubbles of immunity to blast, which can really help protect your strike force again from the much longer shot rockets that can do real damage to armor 11 models.
Yeah.
Like, they're powerful, right? Like, if they want to be.
Yeah, that's really strong, right? Because that's going to be their plan for dealing with those strike forces, hoping for those AoEs to work out. And it's worth mentioning, of course, Ron has Force Mastery as well, so he chooses direction that AoEs deviate, giving them even more protection across the whole army.
I think if I didn't want the Assyria list to be relevant in a lot of other places, I would just play Ron if I wanted a dedicated Menoth solve. Like, if this list is really terrifying your meta and you're like, I don't care what I play, I just want to be able to beat this list, I think the Ron Shadows list might be the closest thing to a tech solve.
Yeah, I think so. I love the fact that with Ra'an, you're also applying extreme threat to the juniors who are often running these Judicators, like Tristan or Severus Zero. It's very hard to have them do anything relevant in the game and be safe.
Yeah, they can't block line of sight because you don't even need Shadowfire because your Strike Force can mini feet to ignore the Judicators. So you can push forward and shoot things that are relevant, and Ron's not beyond doing something adorable like just, you know, TKing four Strike Force models to get in range to CRA, Tristan, and kill him.
Yep.
And that works pretty well.
So outside of Retribution, I've heard a few different things on social media, and I just wanted to bounce them off you guys. So one of the things I've heard is Old Witch 3 Dark Menagerie. One of the other things I've heard is Kane 1 Heavy Metal. And then someone mentioned Kruger 2, who we covered in episode 1 of Tactical Tips. Any thoughts on those three casters? Obviously, two of them are leveraging Windstorm, and then Kane is trying to leverage a Magic Weapons Alpha.
So I'm going to let Pat take the lead here and talk about how why Old Witch doesn't work.
So I think Old Witch Dark Menagerie is... We talk about one or two Judicators here. I'm just going to assume two. So the reason you might want to consider Old Witch Dark Menagerie is Windstorm, right? And the idea that making people want to go for it is the fact with Windstorm, you're reducing the threat range of the rockets and you're choosing the direction of the scatters. I think Judicators, I haven't really played the matchup enough, but I think Judicators in general challenging for Grimkin to deal with, and I think the big problem that Old Witch has in particular is they're really good at killing her, like really good, and in order for her to be far up enough to be applying Windstorm, there's not very much space where she can apply Windstorm but not just have Judicators advance and cover her in flame, which is dramatic. The second problem is even with the reduced range of the rockets, they can still potentially advance and do a huge amount of damage because they will often want to advance to be in range of their sprays anyway, and the difference between a range reduced rocket and a spray is not very much. So those things, basically, this is all a by way of saying Windstorm is okay, but it's not great. And Old Witch herself is a bit of a liability against Judicators, and her other abilities aren't doing much into it. So I think it might be a playable matchup, but I'm not wild about it. That's my initial pick.
Like a Boundless Charge Skin and Bones threats 12, and a spray on a Judicator threats 15. So like your choices are now, I'm going to overwhelm you with heavies and put so many forward that you can't kill them all with your sprays, and your rockets at range 9? Question? I think 9.
I think it's 14 normally.
And if you do the math, the number of heavies you have to put into threat range to, quote, overwhelm them when they have access to those rockets at 9, the sprays at 10, and the effective double signs importance if we're talking High Reclaimer, which I think we really are in a broad way, plus nigh unlimited focus to boost damage. It's a lot of heavies, like a lot of stuff dies, and you don't have Arcana, so you can't trigger Sacrifice. If you get very lucky, and a bunch of your pieces live, or they just allocate attacks poorly, I think you could win it. And I think maybe there's circumstances under which, certain tables that like say allowed you to, be line of sight blocked behind a forest from Adjudicator, but then still able to charge it within your threat range could be favorable for you. But barring those situations, I think Pat might still beat you because he's, you know, a robot sent from the future to teach us all how to play War Machine. But I think most folks are not going to find that match particularly favorable.
Yeah, so you, a couple of points I wanted to emphasize. Not having Arcana, like you said, is huge, because Arcana are a huge defensive ability that really help you survive the Judicators. So losing that is a big blow. In regards to how you beat it, I think you're right, Tim. You just have to put lots of heavies in threat range and hope some live. And Boundless Charge does help there, because it means all of the Grimkin heavies threaten at least 10 inches, which is the range of the sprays. And I think the way you want to be playing it is you want to be leading with the Cage Ragers, very slightly behind, or even potentially base to base, although then you're just fighting disaster and disgrace. But if you can position in such a way where they are only in range of your Cage Rager, but you have one or two drones to retaliate without being attacked by disgrace, that's probably the situation you want to try and create in order to be able to do enough retaliation.
Yeah, it's again a very narrow line to walk. I mean, the place where Old Witch is safe is where she, you know, has the Judicators, or the position where the Judicators are going to be within 18 of her, but she's not personally within 15 of any Judicator. Your Cage Ragers want to be within, again, 10 of the position where the Judicators have to come to, but your Skinamones don't want to be within 10, but they do want to stay within 12. They don't want to be so close they get clipped by the blast damage from the Cage Ragers being killed, which can do relevant damage against them. Like, it's, I think you probably have to spend a lot of time just by yourself, just putting the models on the table and like physically understanding the spacing before you can be in a position to really play the matchup in a compelling way on the table. I don't think it's like, I don't think you're just like, no, you get slam dunked, it's terrible, don't even bother thinking about it. But it's very challenging, and it's certainly not a, it's not like the Assyria game where I feel like Assyria is quite favored. You mentioned Kruger 2, who we did talk about in the first episode, who I think is really strong. I think so.
Sorry to interrupt you, Tim. Is Kruger 2 just another Windstorm caster, and that's why he's on this list?
I mean, I think so.
I asked the internet. I didn't filter this list. Sorry.
No. That's good. I'll address it because it's been brought up. Kruger can play in front of his army, which I guess is good. His Windstorm keeps the range of those sprays down to 9, as long as he's within 14 of them. Like, if you walk up and tag the Judicators to protect your army, they walk up and kill you. Like, that's not great, because they also threaten 14 with their rockets, and they threaten 15 with their sprays. But if you play the game where you're a little bit further back, and you say, like, you have to come forward, and when you do, you'll be in Windstorm, which is probably the right way to play it, I think you end up struggling to do work against those Judicators with like the kind of a bones list that we talked about before.
So I think one of the things that Kruger really dislikes is he dislikes good range threats that he can't significantly deal with Windstorm, and he dislikes large, hard-to-kill models that he can't use any of his control abilities against. And the Judicator is both of those things. So this is me having not played the matchup, but it seems to me like a Judicator on paper is one of the very worst things that Kruger can play against.
It was better when it was speed 4. Now that it's speed 5, I think you're hoping that your feet is sufficient control to deal with it, and I think that just simply is not the case. Doubly so for casters like Durst, who can boundless charge it. I think it's really, really awkward for you. And access to shielding is a really big problem, because you maybe have a moment where you're like, I can just boost a whole bunch of gallows shots and be the gunline that I want to be, and maybe with a bit of a spike and really, really dedicated access, I can do most of one, and then I can feet and I can control their positioning and TK a bunch of my pieces back, and then do it again and finish one off, but then they can completely turn that tool off. Mm-hmm. I think it's really bad. I would not feel favored playing Kruger 2 into that matchup.
Me neither.
Okay, and to round it out, like I said, the last thing from the internet was a Kane 1 heavy metal list, which, as near as I can tell, was just relying on an opening alpha of magical guns. Thoughts there, gentlemen?
I really like Kane 1. He's one of my favorite Signar casters to play, and I've played him quite a lot. And the thing that makes K1 great is he's got Snipe, he's got Deadeye, and then his whole battle group has magic guns. I haven't done the math, but I think you need a lot of guns to take down a Judicator. The challenge that I think a lot of Signar, I haven't seen how this list is built, but a lot of Signar guns have more quality than quantity and have a hard time probably doing enough damage to tear down a Colossal. You could look into charges as your best damage per point. But their downside, if you're just going in to fight Judicators without a specific caster in mind, their downside is because they fire two shots that have a relatively lower power. They're especially weak to defensive buffs like Defender's Ward and Inviolable Resolve on two of the casters I recommended earlier. Then, so basically, what do I think? I think you're playing a Jack Gunline versus a Jack Gunline, but the Menoth Jacks do more damage, are harder to kill, have quieter support. Can you overcome that with higher threat range? Maybe. But you're probably relying, like you said, on that Alpha Strike to hit hard enough to kill a Judicator in one round. And I think you'd have to have a very specific list and a bit of luck to pull that off.
Moreover, I think I've done some math with players who are like, this thing I think is pretty good here. And you put a bunch of numbers down and you sit down and you say, okay, yeah, no, that does it. Like that's just enough. Like it's within one standard deviation of killing Judicator, or it's on average dice, it's a couple points over, or it like just does it. As soon as you look at a exemplar interdiction variant that has Roman and Co. in the list, it can be significantly worse, because once they take two of your best shots off the Judicator, suddenly that math has a tendency to collapse pretty aggressively on you. When it does, it's bad.
It's also worth mentioning that those lists on paper always ignore things like terrain and distance. And if your list only just kills a model, then what happens if I just position in such a way that one of your models is out of range?
Right. And a lot of people say, oh, well, I'll just keep all my models in exactly the correct semicircle necessary to do that. And I mean, you can be in the dojo forever talking about that sort of thing, but on the table, it almost materializes as a slightly less effective experience. Pros, the Judicator is very difficult to screen from shooting with terrain. Like, you can shoot through buildings, you can shoot through forests. Cons, you can't suddenly be able to walk through a forest if you didn't have Pathfinder before. You don't necessarily have the ability to put yourself in the correct position to shoot it because, oh, there's a building where I want to be, where I need this seventh Jack to be to do exactly the math that's required. And he can't walk six and be there because he needs to walk five and then go around the building on the next turn or something adorable like that. Which is absolutely Pat's point. I'm just trying to be a bit more specific about it.
Yeah. So we sound a bit down on these solutions. I don't know. They might have more game than we're giving them credit for, but they don't seem to be comprehensive answers in the same way the Retribution list was.
Once again, War Machine is in these circumstances, we're talking about, players at similar caliber of play, tables that don't definitively decide for one player or the other, scenarios where the Judicators can remain relevant and aggressive. Look to leverage those things. Obviously, if you're playing against a less experienced player, that's heavily favored. I still think War Machine is a game where almost universally the more experienced player wins. I think additionally, if you end up with side choice and you can sort of imagine where the Judicators are going to unpack to, you can do a lot of damage to the efficacy of this list by just giving them a badly placed building or wall or any kind of the restricted terrain that can really create problems for their interactions. And then, if your opponent is presenting to you a vector for scenario play, I don't care if you cede 90 points of your list. If you win on scenario, you win the game. So, by all means, give them a ton of medium to great attrition targets if it just wins you the scenario.
Okay, and we've talked on this for a while, so we don't need to dive into it deeply, but is there anything we haven't covered that you think there is potential to play into the Judicator?
Well, I gave you one.
I mean, I don't have anything specific. Before I got excited about different ways that Rhett can smash Judicators, I was going to say that one of the more universally applicable things that I would consider, and this works better for some factions than others, but traditionally, if you want to deal with a couple of Colossals, having multiple cheap heavies is a good way to do that. Cheap heavies have pretty good resilience for their cost. It's unlikely that a Judicator will be able to deal with more than one in a round of shooting, especially if you have defensive abilities, shield guards, caster support, that kind of thing. And if you can be in a position where you can present multiple heavies to a single Colossal, maybe it can kill one and then maybe the others can retaliate or push it out of scenario. And that strategy can apply to almost any faction.
Yeah, like maybe an awesome driller-oriented list could approach this in an exciting way.
Yeah, Or a Magnus II Nomad list, for example.
Or Tauros, who have even a point of armor on that. Like, I don't mean to sound defeatist. We're obviously talking about this list because we feel like it's a really strong, really meta-defining list, and we're trying to help folks both understand it and capitalize on it. The sort of the necessary evil of talking about something that's at the forefront of the metagame is that this is a very new list that hasn't been yet, in my mind, completely solved. If it had been, it wouldn't be as powerful and dominant as it is right now. So if folks have suggestions or tech they think might work or tips and tricks, I'm very open to that right now. This list haunts my nightmares might be an exaggeration, but it might not.
Yeah, I'd be interested to see what people come up with.
Real quickly, as we wrap up this section of the High Reclaimer talk, excuse me, you should retitle this Judicator talk. Do you think there's any merit to going to a solid ground infantry swarm, whether we do that with Gorton or whether we do it with Irusk or anyone else?
Potentially, but I think those infantry have to have good ways of killing the Judicator, right?
Yeah, like Steelheads, probably bad. Hammer Dwarves, better. They'd be better still if they were fast like Osram and solid grounded like Gorton. So the talk I had about Ron, fundamentally that's an infantry swarm list. It's it's 22 models that can threaten the Judicator in a very real way, plus a bunch of blast immunity. If you can pack 22 models that can threaten the Judicator and a bunch of blast immunity, that's great. I think that's a high quality choice. I think something like you mentioned, a Rusk 2, Legion of Steel might be an interesting option here. you need a lot of blast immunity and you need quality attacks when you get there. So Battle Lust and Iron Fang Pikemen are a good choice. Winter Guard are probably a bad choice. But that's the kind of thing that I'd be looking to. I think you need to be able to deliver your solution, and you need to deliver it through not just the rockets, but the sprays. So sufficiently high quality of pieces that can go wide enough that you can keep them fairly well protected, casters resilient enough to stay relevant, and an answer when you get there.
No, I mean, that's great advice. We've heard it from Tim, Pat, and a couple ideas I've even thrown out there. And we'd love to hear from you guys. You guys can post anything that you think we missed from playing into Judicators. You can find us at Facebook at BattleTips. Just leave us a comment. And I really, seriously, we would all really appreciate any tips for playing into the Judicators. I think I can speak for all three of us on that.
That's Tactical Tips episode 2. We all will be going outside and putting sprays in our It's rough. It's definitely rough. It's exciting. It's cool to see War Machine be this challenging.
Awesome, and that's a ton of great information. Hopefully we've provided some information about how to play the High Reclaimer with the Judicator in and out of Exemplar Interdiction, and hopefully some tips about playing around it. Definitely some things we know you can't do into a Judicator. So that kind of wraps up episode 2 of Tactical Tips Mark 2. We hope you enjoyed it. Please jump on Facebook at BattleTips. Give us a like and a follow. Also, we'd love to hear about any lists you'd like us to review. Before we go, I'd like to thank Muse on Minis for hosting us, providing all that wonderful bandwidth we eat up. You can follow them at Muse on Minis on Facebook and on Twitter. Tim, do you have any parting shots or things in the works people should be aware of?
I'll be attending War Machine Weekend in not too much time. So for folks who are attending that event, I'd love to say hey and chat. I've got at least a couple of rounds of the Invitational to play, hopefully more than one. And I'm hosting a social, if you are so inclined. It is a Scotch and cigar-focused social. It will be just outside of the back of the hall, in the little patio space there. I'll be bringing some Canadian maple whiskey, possibly a couple of other varieties of whiskey. And I believe there will be folks also sharing drinks. So everyone attending the event is invited to that. If you're not attending the event, you just happen to be in St. Louis, you can probably come by too. If you're listening to this podcast, you're probably our adequate audience. And if you want to bring something to share, bring something
to
share.
No, I'm very excited about the social, Tim. I will be there with cigars in hand. Pat, what about you? Anything exciting going on your side of the pond?
Next big event for me is ClogCon, which is 26th, 28th of October. Really looking forward to that event. It's one of the best US-style conventions in Europe, in my opinion. Always has a ton of great people from all around the EU, so really looking forward to that.
Awesome. Well, good luck at ClogCon. And Tim, good luck at the Invitational and War Machine Weekend.
For Pat and Tim, this is Sung Soo wishing you all good health and good gaming. Until next time, cheers. I'm not being very articulate.
Yeah.
Sorry, I was talking on mute, so you didn't hear me.
Okay. No worries. We were like, the next question, but we didn't want to say
that. And I was like, why aren't they doing? And then I looked and I clicked my mute button. So.
Stuff?
No, I'm not complaining. And I think the things we went over are great. And I actually am excited to see what people reply with. One of the guys I was talking to when it turned into a debate was really heralding Chargers fam with Kane, and it was interesting to hear the logic. And I brought up, like, what happens if Kane clips a deviation? And anyway, yeah, but moving on. Pat threw up in his mouth a little bit.
He's gone. Boosted signs importance power 10.
Kane's arm, it's only 14? Dice off 3. 13? It's dice off 3. Yeah. He's armor 13.
Yeah.
And he's like, that's really bad. And, like, heaven forbid the sprays get anywhere near him. He's just straight fuck.